What can we learn from our Lutheran forefathers on how to face the challenges of a culture openly hostile to Christianity? Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, has written a column for the Latest Issues Etc. journal titled For Such a Time as This. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You'll also find Pastor Will Whedon's article on the monthly Psalter, the free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Jesus never once talked about abortion. Never once.
The gospel explicitly says and proclaims how God creates and redeems and calls every human being from the moment of fertilization to forever to be his precious treasure. I mean, that is the heart of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
As our world descends more into the chaos of sexual confusion, identity confusion, and general dissensus and anger, we are the city on the hill, a place where there's forgiveness for all.
Although we are capable of great acts of kindness, history teaches us that we sometimes need saving from ourselves. God sent into the world a unique person, neither a philosopher nor a general, but a savior with the power to forgive.
Police officers in Michigan love listening to Issues Etc.
Well, it began as allegations of a racial slur from the stands at a BYU-Duke volleyball game. It became a national story. It led to religious slurs during a different sporting event in Oregon. And there was a flurry of apologies, of retractions, and all of the outlets that were at first giving a lot of credence to this story are now saying there's no evidence. How does this happen in the modern 24/7 news cycle? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, September the 21st. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about media storms surrounding Brigham Young University athletics. Terry Mattingly of Get Religion will be our guest. We'll spend some time with Delano Squires of the Heritage Foundation discussing the need to include fathers in the pro-life message. And Dr. Reed Lessing will join us to remember Old Testament prophet Jonah. The church remembers him on the 22nd of September. He's author of the Concordia Commentary on Jonah. Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center for Southern Journalism and Politics at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate in the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Briefly give us the who, what, where, when, and why, and how of these stories, and then if you would answer this question for me, were these religion stories as much as they were sports stories?
Well, let me answer that question first. I think it's important to realize that the tensions surrounding Brigham Young University and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in general are clearly religious. For many, many years, the people formerly known as Mormons took a lot of heat and flack, in my opinion, at some points in their history for valid reasons, from people on kind of the theological right, as well as from cultural people on the left. I mean, I think, you know, this gets us into discussions of what the word cult means when it's used as a doctrinal term, as opposed to when it's used as a sociological term. So you can't talk about BYU at all without talking about religion, because many of the tensions surrounding the school are rooted in religion and in kind of a cultural prejudice against conservative forms of religion, of which the Latter-day Saints certainly would still fit that description. And it's also important to realize that people shouting abuse at BYU sports teams is not new. We'll get to the timeline again here in a second with what happened at Oregon just the other day. But in some of the coverage in Utah media and elsewhere, it mentioned that BYU officials said this is certainly not the first time this has ever happened to us. In fact, there were allegations about abuse being shouted at the BYU players during a game with the University of Southern California, I believe, either last year or in a recent year. So this is an ongoing situation. So what happened was on August 26th, there was a girls' volleyball game. And afterwards, an African-American player from Duke University's volleyball team said that during the game, when she served, people shouted that the whole student section shouted racial slurs at her. That was the original wording. And then it became very specific that there was one man who was accused of shouting a racial slur at her when she served. And also she reported that she felt threatened by a white male. Now, you get into some interesting issues there in terms of whether other members of her own team backed her by saying her statements were accurate or simply supported her in her complaints about this. So we go into kind of the first wave of the coverage, in which it was first attributed to this volleyball player, but also to was a person who's her godmother, who seems to be kind of an activist on these issues. And it was covered pretty much everywhere as if this was fact. I mean, this went all over the place. This went New York Times, The Hill, NPR, CNN, ESPN. I mean, you name it, all the national media took this story on its face value. And that's kind of the end of Act One of this drama. Act Two begins a few days later when Brigham Young, who at first initially apologized profusely for the behavior of its student section of and banned one man from attending sports events at BYU again, etc. But then this is where technology kind of clicks into play. Now, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone now who follows the news that we live in the age of smartphones. And thus you had hundreds of people shooting smartphone video of the game. And you also had a security video, and you had what has been described several places as pretty high-quality audio of the event. I don't know if this was on, say, a digital radio signal. But a conservative student newspaper on campus got a call from someone, anonymous person within the sports department at BYU, that said, people may want to take a look at this, because we're not seeing any of the behavior that our school has already apologized for. And so Brigham Young began its own investigation of the event. And for example, they had in security video shots this man who they had banned pretty much shown almost all the time, because, you know, you've got wide angle security videos, and you can blow these things up, and people began looking at them, and they couldn't find this man yelling the N-word or doing what seemed to be anything threatening at all. It was also assumed that if the student body had been chanting slurs, this should have shown up on video recordings of the game on somebody's smartphones. I mean, we live in a world where somebody there live would certainly be offended by what was happening. And so we ended up with a body of digital evidence being covered by media in Utah and in one of the student papers at BYU. And this is what didn't seem to ever bleed over into mainstream coverage of the event. Eventually, Brigham Young said, we find no evidence that this happened, that this man, we've lifted his ban from our events, because we simply cannot, in technical materials, in digital materials, in sound recordings, in video recordings, at this event, we can't find any corroboration of the accusations. Now, they never said, this player is lying. They never said, you know, that Duke University should apologize for raising these issues. But this began to really, it was a huge wave of news about Brigham Young University and created quite a bit of stink. Eventually, you began to have conservative media picking up the BYU denial. And so you have a memorable headline at the New York Post, a conservative publication. BYU student newspaper scoops left-wing media in Duke volleyball racial slur saga. And it's kind of a not quite punchy enough to be a classic New York Post headline, but you kind of get the idea. And at this point, the lack of investigation of the story became a story, but only in the conservative press. Now, I want to praise at this point the fact that I've been looking for some other mainstream media follow-up here, but there was at least one National Public Radio story that went back, announced the details of BYU's investigation, why they concluded, what they concluded, interviews with 50 people who attended the event. It gives kind of a general description of the broadcast recordings and the other things that were investigated. And NPR reported that. And then it goes back to cover the earlier allegations and the debates about them. I would consider the NPR story to be kind of a bare minimum of a report, but it's a good report. But here's what it isn't. I still don't know, unless I have missed it, I haven't found any mainstream media outside of Utah that went back and said, well, can we hear the audio? Can we see some of these videos? Or even called, read up on Facebook with people talking about the event and called them up with interviews and saying, well, do you have smartphone video that backs up what you're saying, you know, et cetera. We didn't see the kind of digital media investigation of the event that I think it's safe to say is now the norm when covering controversial issues in American life. Does that make sense? I mean, I've walked you through this entire first incident, and that's kind of where we stand. And I'm not aware of any other national media even tempering their stories, retracting their stories. They accepted the accusations as fact, and some of them did, and some of them didn't go back and report the evidence that BYU claimed it found. I should also stress that Salt Lake City is not a normal newspaper town in that you have two newspapers. One of them, the Deseret News, is directly linked to the church. So I'm sure national media would not take the views of the Deseret News all that seriously, and unless they started printing verbatim material and stuff. But the Salt Lake City Tribune is a very independent newspaper and is known for its frequent showdowns with church authorities, discussions of flaws in church policies. It certainly would cover the church's controversial and complicated history with race in previous decades, if not in the previous century. So when you have the Utah media, you can't just say, well, that's all church publications, because it's not. And here we had an independent but conservative student newspaper, and we had the various Utah media trying to get their hands on the actual digital evidence and reporting that I'm not seeing anybody print information drawn from actual audio and video sources that back the original accusations. Now, that's the end of the first half of this story. Not that long later, BYU's football team goes up to play at Oregon. And BYU is, of course, a major player in football and basketball in America, and will soon, after years of controversy, which we can discuss later, is soon going to become a member of the Big 12 football conference. And they went up to play Oregon, and the student body is on numerous videos there. I want to be discreet here. Let's just say that they adapted popular chants aimed at Joe Biden, and they aimed it at Mormons, as in F word the Mormons, chanted over and over by the student body. And videos of these attacks, verbal attacks, I should stress, on the BYU football team immediately hit Twitter and immediately hit other forms of social media. What's fascinating is what didn't happen then, and that is we didn't see any national coverage of this incident, even though it came so soon after the other one. And eventually, the evidence became so obvious that we had apologies to BYU from the governor of Oregon and from other officials for the behavior on video of their students. And then the Utah governor slammed the Oregon, and then we had apologies coming from Oregon. Let me see if it was actually the governor of Oregon. No, it was not the governor of Oregon. It was the actual University of Oregon who apologized for the disgraceful chant at the football game. And you had CNN cover the apology from Oregon. But once again, what we didn't have was actual news coverage of the incident, kind of like in real time. Like that evening on ESPN, you didn't have people speaking out on both sides of this scandalous event saying, how could Oregon have put up with such religious bigotry against a religious minority in American life, et cetera, et cetera. Eventually, you got reactions when it kind of turned political. So once again, the political story was worthy of coverage. The religion story didn't seem to be that worthy of coverage. And the sports level of this didn't get coverage in the second incident that it got in the first incident until, like I said, we had the public apologies. Now, that was long and very complicated. But my point here is this is a perfect example of some of the divisions that now seem to be in the American media, dividing people one from another in terms of what they hear about, what views they hear expressed, what views they hear questioned. And then here's the most important thing for me from a journalistic point of view. Do they actually see media investigation of controversies of this kind, which used to be kind of normal? And as we entered the smartphone era, it's very rare that you have controversial events in American life and the press doesn't have material drawn from social media within a matter of a few hours, and certainly once it hits Twitter. Did that make any sense at all?
Yes, it did. Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center for Southern Journalism and Politics at the University of Mississippi. We are talking about media storms surrounding Brigham Young University athletics. When we come back, why wasn't the second incident at the football game immediately covered by the media?
Come and hear abortion survivor Melissa Odin, Jeannie Mancini from the March for Life, and Blaze TV and radio host Steve Dace at the 2022 Lutherans for Life National Conference, Friday and Saturday, October 21st and 22nd in Rock Island, Illinois. Lutherans for Life National Conferences provide valuable information and encouragement to you, your congregation, and your community. The 2022 Lutherans for Life National Conference, October 21st and 22nd in Rock Island, Illinois. Learn more at lutheransforlife.org/conference.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod cares deeply for those who protect our nation. Are you or a loved one currently serving? Ministry to the Armed Forces would like to help. We provide devotional literature to encourage faith. Send your mailing address to lcmschaps@lcms.org or call us at 314-996-1337. Those in uniform are comforted with Psalm 28. The Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusts in Him and He helps me.
Solid, serious, substantive,
You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
We desire for all Christian children, including those with learning or behavior challenges, to receive a strong education in the faith. At simplyclassical.com, you will find reading, penmanship, and copybook exercises based on the truth, wisdom, and comfort of God's Word. We include Aesop's fables and classic children's literature, math, and science, all from Memoria Press. Use promo code LPR22 at simplyclassical.com.
The mission of Ad Crucem is to provide high-quality products and services that confess the one true Christian faith. Check out their Christian greeting cards, jewelry, posters, fine art, church banners, and more at adcrucem.com, adcrucem.com. We're talking about media storms surrounding Brigham Young University athletics. Terry Matting is our guest. So, Terry, you mentioned several times there that in the first incident where there was an alleged racial slur being kind of routinely delivered during one of the African-American players serving, almost immediate and widespread coverage, and it was rather credulous coverage, I should say. So much so that even, like you said, Brigham Young issued an apology.
Yeah.
Even before an investigation or anything like that. Why not immediate coverage? It's a related story, obviously. Why not immediate coverage of the, I will call it a religious slur, being chanted by large portions of the student body at this football game in Oregon?
Well, I think it's important to understand the context of the original story. And it fits in with a lot of other controversies in higher education in American life right now. But if you go online and you do any kinds of searching about Brigham Young, you will find out that Brigham Young is a very controversial school with the American left. In fact, it is routinely listed as a dangerous school, a school that places its own students at risk and in danger. Now, the issue there, while you do have complicated discussions about race in a very Caucasian state like Utah, or a largely white state like Utah, and I'm not saying that there are no problems there. Like I said earlier, there's a long, complicated history between the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and race, back to when people of color could not be ordained to its priesthood or raised into positions of leadership. That was changed by a revelation from its prophet decades ago. And now you have heavy, large groups of Latter-day Saints in different parts of the world, especially the Pacific Islands and people of color in Samoa and in other parts. And you see this in their sporting teams, especially in the NFL even. You've had lots of people from BYU end up in the National Football League. So my point here is it's LGBTQ issues that specifically gets BYU listed as controversial. It was at the heart of the opposition to BYU's entrance into the Big 12. I believe it was about a decade ago when it was first proposed that they join the conference, and gay rights groups on secular campuses rose up in opposition, and BYU was denied membership to the Big 12. So you have a lot of controversy about BYU, and that, simply stated, is because of its doctrines. And BYU has a doctrinal covenant establishing that it is a faith-based school, a doctrinally defined voluntary association. And if you come to BYU as a student or faculty member or staff, whatever, you agree either that you're going to live by its tenets, the tenets of the church, or you're at least not going to attack them. You're not going to oppose them. This has led to tremendous venom within the gay community, and frankly, it's led to divisions inside BYU, something that we've seen at other evangelical schools, Catholic schools, etc. These are controversial issues. But before we move to the Oregon thing, another school in the Big 12 is Baylor University, my alma mater, one of my two alma maters. My other one is the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. Let me put it this way. BYU recently played Baylor. Last year, BYU lost to Baylor in Waco, and this year, Baylor lost to BYU in Utah. Do you think it would have received national coverage if the Baylor student body had chanted, not just maybe not F words, but had chanted anti-Mormon slogans loud enough that they could be heard on the field and picked up just by anybody with a smartphone in the stadium? Do you think that would have been covered as news?
Oh, I think it most definitely would have been covered. Maybe not well, but it would have been covered, sure.
Yeah, and there would have been the Baptist versus the Mormons. That would have been the big hook to make that a controversial story. And by the way, I think if that happened, which it has not happened to my knowledge, at least I sure haven't read about it, and I think we would see coverage. I would say that at the heart of the media divide over coverage of Brigham Young University sporting events, and these two controversies in particular, at the heart of the divide is this old question that we've discussed so often, which is that BYU's defense of basic Latter-day Saint orthodoxy in its student covenant lifestyle code, that makes BYU an example of bad religion as opposed to enlightened good religion. And thus we have a very familiar storyline that we now see over and over and over from coast to coast. There's a national story unfolding right now in New York City with Yeshiva University, and we're eventually going to get, I believe, a Supreme Court decision about whether Yeshiva University has a right to not recognize an LGBTQ group officially on its campus because of its identity as a modern Orthodox campus. Now, it doesn't help at all that Yeshiva a few years ago took some of its religious doctrines and claims out of its official school documents. And Julia Dean, in a piece at Get Religion, pointed this out and said, this is going to get them in trouble. So what we have here is a school that is in trouble because it's being honest about its doctrinal beliefs, and they're in trouble because they continued not to back down on the sexuality issues and other things related to the unique beliefs of its campus. And that means BYU is apparently fair game. It's a dangerous school that is out of the mainstream. And that would tend to make many journalists believe, well, to paraphrase Ronald Reagan of all people, there they go again. There goes that dangerous school. There's a tendency to automatically assume that the student body did this. It was one of those stories, maybe, that was too good to be investigated. You didn't need to investigate it. It fit the template. The second story didn't need to be reported because, of course, it was okay for secular students at a liberal, mainstream, progressive university in a deep, deep blue part of the state, and it's not much, you can't get much deeper blue than Oregon. Of course, it was fine for them to chant anti-religious slogans at the bad school's football team. Thus, what's there to cover? Well, there's nothing to cover until it gets political, and you have political leaders begin to get involved in it. Then you have Oregon's apology, and I think I saw maybe a 10-15 second report on ESPN about Oregon's apology, but I don't think there was they certainly didn't dare, even with bleeps, show the video. I'd be very interested in knowing if any mainstream publication or news website or broadcast station actually broadcast the common, you could find them anywhere, videos of the scandalous chants in the stands at the Oregon game. You would have had to have done some bleeping. But that didn't seem to prevent people from covering the Let's Go Brandon and the F. Joe Biden controversies. People found creative ways of handling it in that case.
With about 30 seconds here, quickly, what other angles would make these stories important?
Well, like I said, there are legal issues here. To some degree, the question is, does a school like Brigham Young have the right to define its community according to doctrines on sexuality and other issues? And these stories are going from coast to coast. And I would say in this case, the controversies swirling around BYU's moral beliefs influenced the coverage of these two stories. And that gets us back to equal access laws and the Hosanna Tabor ministerial exemption case at the U.S. Supreme Court. And eventually, we're going to have someday a U.S. Supreme Court decision. We're going to have a case about whether or not sexual orientation and gender claims are equal to racial disputes in terms of discrimination laws, because that's really what's hovering in the background of the controversies about BYU.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow at the Overby Center for Southern Journalism and Politics at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
Delano Squires joins us on the other side of the break. We're going to discuss the need to include fathers in the pro-life message. Stay tuned.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod needs faithful Lutheran laymen, commissioned ministers, and pastors to serve on its boards, commissions, and agencies. Nominations are open for the Boards of Regents at our Concordia Universities and Seminaries, the LCMS Board of Directors, the Office of National and International Mission, the Lutheran Church Extension Fund, Concordia Publishing House, and the Commission on Theology and Church Relations. Learn more at issuesetc.org/nominations. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod needs you. issuesetc.org/nominations.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Not everyone is comfortable with new technology. Dial A Podcast gives all generations of your congregation an easy way to hear your sermons or even devotionals and Bible studies. Once you've completed a simple one-time setup, we take care of the rest. All your congregants have to do is dial the number from any phone to listen to your latest podcast, all at no additional cost to them. Dial A Podcast. Extend the reach of your sermons. Get started at dialapodcast.com now.
One of the most important things that Martin Luther did for the church was translate the Bible into the language of the people, which in his context was German. Now, he began this work while he was at the Wartburg Castle, and the first stage of it was completed in September 1522 when he finished the translation of the New Testament. To learn more about all this work that he did translating the Bible into German and the effects it had, pick up your copy of the September issue of the Lutheran Witness, visit cph.org/witness to subscribe, or visit our website, witness.lcms.org, to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.